Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen, listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
The Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Last week we celebrated 2 years on the air, and this week we'll do a little bit more celebrating through a fantastic, fantastic WrestleMania roundtable. We have five people, including myself, very, very eager to talk about WrestleMania 30 and also the Raw succeeding the WrestleMania 30. So without further ado, let's introduce our WrestleMania roundtable. We got a fellow radio show host, avid wrestling fan, and also a lyricist. So give it up for Armand.
What's going on, everybody? How's everybody doing?
Armand.
What up?
Armand. Also, we have from the Bleacher Report, we have coming back, number two roundtable, we have Julio Romano. How are you, sir? From Montreal, Canada, eh?
Pretty much. I'm visiting. Yeah, how's it going, everybody?
Fantastic. Going well. Fantastic. And also from the Bleacher Report, I am so pleased and so proud to announce a new roundtable guest, along with Armand. We have Andy Susak from the Bleacher Report and What Culture. How are you tonight, sir?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Doing good. Glad to have you. And of course, we have our esteemed Pancakes and Power Slams co-host Derek here with us as always. How are you tonight, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How's everybody on the roundtable doing? This is going to be an exciting, fantastic night. We're going to talk tons of wrestling. 90 minutes is never enough. That's our motto here. So let's get the thing going.
All right.
Absolutely. As we do every week, we have the chat room opened up. We're going to do some trivia as we do every single week here. And trivia questions galore. And maybe I will target some trivia questions to the guests as a little initiation to stump the guests a little bit. Possibly. We'll see the wrestling knowledge of the guests. And I am so happy and so pleased to have each and every one of you here, knowing that you are avid wrestling fans and do well. Armand is an avid wrestling fan. I know very well as his wrestling knowledge, and as far as Andy and Julio is concerned, they write professionally about professional wrestling. So there you go. That goes to show my fellow Bleacher Report family members. And so let's get into it. Of course, the trivia question. We always lead with trivia questions. And so what Survivor Series did the Undertaker debut. The guests can't say it yet. I've been targeted to a guest. What we do is we have people in the chat room say it first, and or tweet Twitter at Crave Wrestling. If you can't tweet it, if you can't do a chat, if there's not the correct answer to the chat room, then we'll open it up for the guests to. We already got an answer in the chat room. 1990. All right. 1990. Well, let's get to the WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans, Louisiana. We start off with the Usos defeating the Real Americans, Ryback and Los Matadores. I think, and I've said this before, and I say it again, I think this match should have been on the show, on the actual show. I think it would have been a good dynamic for the show. And we had a Divas Invitational breaking up, what we will go into as far as what was just a, yeah, I'm sure there's differing opinions. I wrote an article about it on wrestling.com. I got over 700 comments as far as the controversy of the streak, and we'll get to that later. But as far as the Usos open up for the pre-show winning the match, I think it was a good kickstart, but I wasn't a fan of it being on the pre-show. However, I think it was a great move with the Usos retaining. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I'll agree. It was kind of good to see the Usos get their, well, I guess, kind of mini WrestleMania moment. I wish the Los Matadores wouldn't have been in. I would have traded them out with Goldust and Cody, but overall, pretty solid opener, I'd say.
I agree as far as the Goldust and Cody. What do you think, Armand?
I agree, and Chris, I was talking to you the other day. You know, if had it not been for Goldust and Cody, the Authority would not have picked up the steam that it did. They were very integral in, you know, them becoming a strong heel faction. So I would have loved to see them get some sort of WrestleMania payoff had it not been a win, because I agree, I like the Usos winning. They could have at least had some sort of moment. Since we weren't going to get the long-rumored Goldust and Cody matchup. But, you know, to answer your question, I definitely like the match itself. Oh, and one more point. I'll ask you guys this. Like, if that match is not on the pre-show and it's on the main card, does Cesaro work two matches and still does the Battle Royal?
I think so. I think that would have actually made the Battle Royal more meaningful. I think him being on the main card and coming back out on the main card, it would have been more of a valiant effort type of deal, because there were still some streaming issues with the network during the pre-show, since it was pre-show exclusive, which I don't think it was a good idea that was the case. But I think that if Cesaro would have been on the show twice, similar to Daniel Bryan, I think it would have added an extra spark to the Battle Royal. What do you think, Julio?
I think it would have given him also an extra nudge in his push, because he's doing great, and him winning, which I don't even think he was announced officially to be part of that, made my night, honestly, for that match. So he's already destined to be having a great year so far, so I think it would have added a lot of fire in his forthcoming push, plus the whole, like, I have to get back to that Goldust Cody Rhodes thing. They made such a great impact on that tag team division all by themselves. Yes, the Shield were really good, and, you know, they were impressive and stuff, but Cody Rhodes and Goldust deserved at least to be a part of that tag team title match, even if, you know, if you're thinking about it, they're probably going to have a feud with the Usos now. Who knows if it's, you know, if it's in the works or not, but they deserve better than just being put in that Battle Royal, where we barely didn't even see them participate in that whole match.
Andy, do you agree?
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah, I mean, they didn't even give those guys a spot, really. in the Battle Royal. Like, they didn't, you know, they didn't get their moment to shine, or they didn't, like, you know, turn on each other. So, yeah, it was pretty much a waste to have them in there.
Derek?
And they made, like, such a fuss. Like, they put so much spotlight on Alberto Del Rio. For some reason, at the end, I was at a certain point, I thought he was going to win. I was so disappointed. But, you know, it turned out well. But, you know, it could have been Cody Rhodes that eliminated five guys instead of Del Rio, which is honestly a useless character to me. That's that's my opinion. Yeah. But, yeah.
Derek has his spite, I guess, or disagreements with Alberto Del Rio. I would have joined him. Do you want to elaborate on why Alberto Del Rio shouldn't have been or showcased as much as he was at WrestleMania?
Yeah, because he's just a dust in the wind now. There is Alberto Del Rio really doesn't hold any credibility with the WWE nowadays. They keep holding him up there for some reason, for some odd reason.
Oh, I agree.
Alberto Del Rio, and they keep pushing him, making him look good when he doesn't deserve it, doesn't hold a candle to it. He can't do it. And with the agreement to everyone else as far as Goldust and Cody Rhodes being in the Battle Royal was an absolute waste. It was another, say, a disappointment of WrestleMania. And, you know, them battling the Usos in the dark match would have been sweet.
And what I don't understand is the fact that Alberto Del Rio – now, there's been reports on Wrestling.com, the site that I work for, that Alberto Del Rio and Big E is going to start a feud, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with an Alberto Del Rio and Big E Langston Intercontinental Championship feud just for the purposes of Big E getting over, because I don't realize why Alberto Del Rio beat Big E twice cleanly and then lost two contenders matches for the Intercontinental Championship on SmackDown and Main Event. So that doesn't make any sense to me, and I just don't like the fact that Big E is just losing cleanly like nothing. And we'll talk about Raw in a minute. And I'm just gonna leak a little bit of my thoughts about the Triple Threat match. John Cena should have taken that fall. So we'll get to that in a minute. But as far as we'll get to the Battle Royal as a whole. But I definitely think there's some good points made there. Then we get Hulk Hogan. Then we get, in my opinion, the best opener of WrestleMania history. We get Hulk Hogan coming out, talking about the Silver Dome, which was the Super Bowl.
That was hilarious.
It's now a running joke as far as the Silver Dome versus the Super Dome. And he rebounded it pretty well. I think it was better than the rebound that R-Truth, was it Green Bay, Wisconsin, that R-Truth said, and they were somewhere else in Wisconsin or something, that when he did the whole What's Up thing a couple years ago, and he almost got booed out of the building. But it was a good rebound from Hulk Hogan. But what made it even better was the fact that Steve Austin came out, passing the torch, so to speak, generation, and then his parallel at the time, just about The Rock. And I remember just me sitting there just saying, The Rock has to come out. Armand mentioned this as well. The Rock has to come out to just complete this whole thing. And the fact that he came out, and they used all three of them so perfectly. I didn't want to see some big Rock build. I didn't want to see any Rock match. Austin, really, to be honest with you, I would have not really cared about an Austin match either. The guy's 50 years old, just about. And then, of course, we don't want to see Hogan fight. So the fact that they used them at the openers to kind of pass the torch to WrestleMania 30, it was really meaningful. It said a whole lot, and I think that it was a fantastic thing. The only thing, it was an A segment. The only thing that would have made it an A-plus to me is that if they would have showcased, if they really want to pass the torch, they should have showcased some type of mid-card heel, namely or ideally Damian Sandow, to come out there and just eat all of their finishers. I think that would have been a really good spot for any type of mid-card heel at the time, and preferably Damian Sandow, because he hasn't been getting anything. What do you think, Armand?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Damian could have ate that, you know, since it was three of them. You know, each member of 3MB could have, you know, ate a finisher. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess my question is I don't know if Hogan can lift his leg high enough to take a boot. So, I'm cool with, you know, him just ripping his shirt and pointing to the crowd and doing all that stuff. But, yeah, I agree, though, you know, it would have been nice to see Damian, you know, eat some finishers. But, you know, I don't want Rock to tear anything. I don't want Austin to mess his neck up, you know. So I'm cool with the moment being what it was. And especially in retrospect, and we'll talk about it later, I really feel like that segment and a few other things that happened at WrestleMania was really like a passing of the torch. And, you know, they're really on the new generation of their roster.
I guess they're serious about the reality era, Andy.
It appears so. I mean, didn't CM Punk really call it the reality era a couple of years ago, but
yeah,
maybe it's finally happening. On your point on Damian Sandow, I think that would have been kind of fun if that's like his gimmick of ruining big moments, like how he interrupted the DX reunion a couple of years ago.
Exactly.
I miss the robe and the attitude. Why did they change that character all of a sudden? He used to be so interesting. He was hilarious in his villainous ways. And now he's just another whatever character. Unfortunately, he's great, you know. Just the tribute to the troops part with Miss Piggy was too funny.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
I think
it's the WWE's attempt to invest in something initially and then just kind of it being swept under the rug. They've done that many times. They do that with mid-card titles, unfortunately. They've done that with Ambrose's U.S. title reign. They've done it with Big E's title reign. They did it with Cesaro's U.S. title reign. When Barrett was champ and he was going back and forth with Miz, he had a really bad reign at that time. Curtis Axel had a bad IC title reign. Mm. Santino was a U.S. champ, and Jack Swagger. So Jack Swagger almost won. He was feuding with Santino at the time. But they just really have dropped the ball on investing characters. And many people, when Damian Sandow lost to Cena on Raw, they said, okay, well, Cena still put him over, and that's still a launch to Damian Sandow's career. But from the very beginning, I didn't agree with that. I didn't think that Sandow was going to – we were going to see much of Sandow after that loss. And you will talk about your berries. A lot of people talk about Triple H bringing out the shovel, and he's known for having his shovel in his back pocket. But, I've had some interesting conversations with a colleague about who's a John Cena fan, with a good friend of mine, is a John Cena fan, and you know we talk about people that John Cena bury, and he goes the bat for John Cena as far as people who he's put over. You can say matches against Seth Rollins helped, matches against Dolph Ziggler helped, but as far as Cena losing cleanly to someone, I mean, we have five wrestling scholars here. Who can think about people, who can think about someone who John Cena put over clean in the past couple years? Can anybody think about that? Can anybody think of someone?
Well, I guess the Daniel Bryan in the SummerSlam main event.
Yep.
Yeah. Daniel Bryan, but I mean, you know, anyone other than the current World Heavyweight Champion, WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
Maybe
as far as a rising star is concerned.
Cleanly?
Yeah, cleanly. Can nobody see that point?
I guess the Miz is out.
Yeah, well, that was 27, though. That was 3 years ago, and that was because of a Rock interference. So
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that goes to show, you know, Cena, and we'll get to the, as far as Cena losing, should have taken the fall, we'll get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. Daniel Bryan defeating Triple H. This match, this match went below my expectations, to be honest with you. I was expecting this to be one of the best matches of the night because I know that both of them can go. I really don't. We just got a comment in the chat room. What was the answer to the trivia question? It was 1990 is correct. So congratulations on that. I really think that it was a good match. It was a good match. It was a good match. I will say that. But I don't know. I guess it was my personal expectations that it didn't deliver as much as it could have to start off the show. But Daniel Bryan winning was good, but it just didn't meet my expectations. Did it meet yours, Derek?
No, it didn't. Not at all. Did not meet my expectations. It was kind of slow. I mean, they had its high moments, but I mean, it just kind of makes Triple H look like a punk now. He put all this effort into destroying Daniel Bryan, and every time he's done it, he's been unsuccessful, but does it in a cheating way. That just kind of kills the Triple H. I mean, even afterwards, in the last match, he did the same thing. Came out, then he hits him in the shoulder with the chair after the first match they had together. And even last night on Raw, it was just like, I mean, he just looks like a moron almost. So it's getting old. Let Daniel Bryan have the belt, have his moment, move on and do something else, Triple H. Stay in wrestling.
Before we get Andy's opinion, next trivia question is: what former ROH superstar was known as Scott Goldman in the WWE? What former ROH star was known as Scott Goldman in the WWE? Of course, tweet at Crave Wrestling. We got the chat room filling up here, so be sure to let us know your answer to that. And of course, if no one gets into the chat room or Twitter, I'll direct it to one of my panelists and see if they know a little bit of ROH knowledge. So, all right. So Andy, Daniel Bryan versus Triple H.
I'm kind of on the same page you guys are. I liked it overall, but yeah, it didn't meet my expectations. It wasn't like a classic. I mean, I think it went like 25 minutes, but it took me probably 10-15 minutes before I, got invested into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Armand, what do you think?
I ascribe to the theory that Triple H doesn't work good matches with smaller guys, and that is why. You could just tell that I referenced the move when Triple H did a belly-to-back suplex on Bryan. It just looked awkward. Had it been a bigger guy, he would have been able to take the bump better. But, Triple H took the majority of the bump because so little of Daniel Bryan's body actually hit the mat. But with that being said, I liked the opener. I was shocked that Bryan went over clean. I was totally expecting a fatal four-way, some tomfoolery, something. Hogan comes out, reverses some sort of decision, disqualification, sledgehammer, Stephanie, something. But when Bryan went over clean, I was convinced that Bryan was easily going to win the main event until the Undertaker match happened. But we'll get into that a little later. But, I liked it. And one thing that nobody else says is that Triple H is beginning to rival The Undertaker with just amazing WrestleMania entrances. This year was really, really dope. A really, really dope entrance.
Mm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Julio, your thoughts?
I actually liked the match. It was just enough to get the crowd fired up. It was what it needed to be to liven it up. And the priceless expressions on Stephanie's face, her annoying screaming, and, she looks good. She brings something villainous to that whole story. I think she's one of the top, in brackets, heel character of the year. Like, so far, she put in an effort. Daniel Bryan is amazing. Triple H had a great entrance. I think it was enough to start the show properly. I can't say anything that negative.
Who has the better primal scream? So I guess in essence it's the worst primal scream. But who has the better primal scream between Stephanie McMahon and Melina?
Melina. She Melina? Just bent steel with that voice. She just she
is
her
or
Vicky Guerrero.
Oh yeah, Vicky Guerrero.
I gotta call an audible and go with Scary Sherry.
Ooh.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
Scary Sherry. Yeah.
Oh,
Sherry Martel had a really good, I guess, primal scream. Melina's though to me was just
that was
it became her trademark and
dogs could hear that.
Yeah, we got a comment in the chat room. Melina, hands down. Yeah, it was something about Melina that, I think it was Julio that just said dogs can hear that. Yes, that's a really good analogy there. It was just really, really bad. So next we get to Triple H attacking Daniel Bryan post match, and so it was more to see when he did that. I think it was pretty much a lock for me. That Daniel Bryan was going to win the match. And by the way, Colt Cabana is the correct answer in the chat room, so good job there. Next trivia question is, who brought out Giant Gonzalez? Who was the manager of Giant Gonzalez in the WWE? And what, if you want to one up, what WrestleMania did Giant Gonzalez go against The Undertaker? WrestleMania did Giant Gonzalez go against The Undertaker? But the original question is who brought Giant Gonzalez to the WWE? Who was his manager? But as far as Triple H is concerned, when he hit Daniel Bryan with the chair, it was pretty much a lock for me that he was going to kind of overcome all the odds and do all that. So, but that was one of the only things that was predictable. Good job, chat room. We got one person saying WrestleMania 9, the other person saying Harvey Whippleman. Both of those are correct. So it was pretty much a lock for me. But I wanted it to happen, so it was one of the only predictable moments that I actually was hoping that would fill the predictability. Next, we get the Shield against the Kane and New Age Outlaws, the corporates, as I like to call them. Andy, I thought that this match was, to be honest with you, I think this match should have been on the pre-show as far as how it was. And again, I referenced the streaming issues and the fact that for those who do not have the WWE Network, I know for sure that the Shield versus Kane and New Age Outlaws match was definitely more expendable than the four-way match. The four-way match was really good. Kane and New Age Outlaws, it was a squash, and I suppose it made the Shield look better, but just the dynamic of the match didn't go well for me, Andy.
Yeah, I could see this bringing that up if the time would allow it. I guess my only problem with that would be like putting the Shield on the pre-show, where I think they were already deserving better this year. But I think you could definitely make the case. The match it was kind of just disappointing. I mean I see what they're trying to accomplish by giving Roman Reigns like the double spear and really highlighting him, but it just didn't feel big enough for me to make up for that.
Armand.
I agree. You can't have a year like the Shield had and, you know, stick them on the pre-show. While the Usos have had a really good year as well, the Shield have pretty much been a part of the anchor of, you know, the last 12 to 15 months of wrestling. So I think that the crowd was a little tired or spent from the Daniel Bryan Triple H match. I don't know why the crowd wasn't really into it. You know, the double triple powerbomb spot was cool. You know, it was a squash. You know, I'm just extremely surprised to see the Shield go over like that. And then the next night on Raw to be just completely dismissive of the Outlaws. Like, yeah, they won't be here for a while. It's like,
all right.
But, you know, I like them on the card. But, again, I wish that the Shield just altogether – I really feel like the battle – I mean, I keep jumping ahead. I'm sorry. But I really feel like the Shield and a lot of the wrestlers in the Battle Royal, you know, if you watch some of the earlier WrestleManias, granted they weren't a lot of time, but, geez, you had like 10, 12 matches. You know, and this card only had 7. A lot of those guys could have had programs between Royal Rumble and now that could have had their payoffs. And as you were referring to earlier, Chris, to kind of build up the mid-card. But, you know, it is what it was. It was, you know, it was a squash. It was a pretty cool squash, and that was it.
I agree as far as the mid-card piece. I think you just made a great point as far as six. I mean, we have 6 weeks. There's 6 weeks between the Rumble and Mania to make something happen with the mid card. I would have been totally fine with an ADR versus Big E match for the Intercontinental Championship at Mania. Del Rio defeats him twice clean, and he overcomes the odds. It helps Big E. You know, he, at one point he was coined as one of the short list of people who are deemed the future of the company with Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt and Cesaro, and so but now he's just continued to go further down the ladder only because of the writers, and it's so it's very interesting. I was transcribing an interview that Wrestling Inc. did with Ted DiBiase last week, and you know he was just saying as far as he doesn't think it's a good idea. It frustrates him and it disappoints him that someone with the power of a pen gets to determine someone's future, and that's the writers for you, and you get paid writers to make something appealing to the fans that makes the numbers go up and the stockholders happy. Since it's a publicly traded company, but you can't be creative enough to have a strong undercard or have a strong mid-card feud somewhere. And I've said this since, you know, the beginning of the year, that I really think the Shield, and I still stand by this, I think the Shield should have won against each other at Mania, and Roman Reigns should have had his moment and become U.S. champion. Julio, do you agree or disagree with that?
I like the fact that we got a tease that the Shield were going to split up. That was interesting. Like you said, there were 6 weeks to build up something, but it turned out it fizzled out. And instead of going with, let's say, a unification match for the IC and US titles, Big E was in a battle royal, and the Shield, though they did exactly what I wrote they would do, they got a squash match against, like, has-beens instead of going against the Wyatt family or something really impressive to thank them for the awesome year they had. No, there was so much time to prepare, and there was nothing came out of it. And like Andy said, like everything, like a strong mid-card doesn't exist in WWE right now. And the point you mentioned about the writers, it's true. Like any one of us could write a better card or a better outcome for any of these guys, which had so much promise, you know?
Derek, do you agree?
It was a part of it was sad, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I agree with that. The New Age Outlaws are almost going to be like, who was the Stooges back in the late 90s? Patterson and Briscoe.
Patterson and Briscoe.
I mean, they had a total squash match. They could have carried that match another 5, 7, 8 minutes, even a 15 minutes, honestly. I mean, they wouldn't do that because, again, it was just a mid-card thing. But the New Age Outlaws would be capable of putting on a really great match against the Shield, along with Kane. But it didn't happen. The Shield, what you mentioned earlier, Chris, about the Shield facing each other now, I could go either way, actually. I could see where you want to see the Shield break up. You want to see Rollins go on and become the biggest thing in the world. but they are a good team together. And to just
I like them together. I don't want them to split up.
If they're split, it's just kind of silly. But that's
but
my view.
But this is Roman. But again, I still think that we've got to have one that becomes the Phoenix of the Shield. We just have to. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There has to be one Phoenix of the Shield. And although Rollins is getting that Hardy pops right now, which is good, Roman Reigns is the guy. I mean, he's the guy, and I understand that the Shield still has life. Armand even mentioned this in a tweet about a week or so ago. The Shield still has life, and SummerSlam would be a good expiration date for them. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that idea. However, it's just that WrestleMania moment. It's just a WrestleMania moment. And I'd even be okay with something that we reported at Wrestling Inc., that a possible replacement third member for the Shield before Leo Kruger was Adam Rose, which I really like Adam Rose, by the way. I think that he would have been a good addition. Mason Ryan was talked about. A lot of people just kind of say no to Mason Ryan, but his actually, for those who don't watch NXT, which I think just about all of us do, his work has increased. His work has gotten better in NXT. So mm-hmm. I think that Mason Ryan's would have been a decent addition. I would have preferred Kruger as Kruger, but Adam Rose, the Adam Rose character, I'm already hooked on, and
really?
Just jumping up a little bit real quick on Raw, he had his promo, which made me happy because that was really cool. So, I think it could have been better as far as the Kane and New Age Outlaws. Actually being a part of the show, I've said many times on the show many weeks that the New Age Outlaws, in my opinion, shouldn't have even had a spot on WrestleMania 30, but they're Triple H's boys. They went to a program with the Shield, and they got kind of handed that like 2 weeks before WrestleMania. So I don't know. I think it could have been better. It was a squash, which... I think it could have been better. Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. We had before we get to that, who managed Dino Bravo in the WWE chat room, Twitter at Crave Wrestling? Who managed Dino Bravo in the WWE? As far as the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal is concerned, I think it went perfect. I think it was good for the fact that it wasn't a surprise entrance type of thing, which a lot of people speculated. Rob Van Dam and Chris Jericho were names that were thrown out there. Frenchie Martin is the correct answer. Good job, chat room. What we got was just a flat out showcase of Cesaro, and for the fact that it wasn't any guest or any surprise element to it, I think that it was greatly booked. The fact that he threw the big – that he picked up the – I mean, talk about raw deadlift power strength. Man, that's just amazing. The fact that he just – I mean, of course, Big Show gave him some assistance with the proper body slam. But the fact that he, you know, lifted him up in that capacity was very impressive. And the way that they did it and the way that they had him eliminate the Big Show, got the crowd erupted, the spot was good. And Armand, I think that it was properly done.
Absolutely, I think I'm not mad at the giant swing because you could go a few ways with that. You could extend a program. I mean, they're probably. I don't know what they're going to do after Swagger again. I'm jumping ahead. I'm sorry, but you know, you could get Show and Cesaro to actually do a program where, you know, it culminates at, you know, Money in the Bank, which I'm starting to believe is replacing Survivor Series as the fourth major pay-per-view because Survivor Series has been so lackluster the last few years and Money in the Bank has been consistently great. You know, it could culminate there with the giant swing, but, you know, him picking up Big Show, walking 4 or 5 steps and launching him over was just unreal. You know, let's also not forget about the Kofi spot, which was unbelievable. Just a really good battle royal, all in all. Really good battle royal. I liked it.
Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Kind of heading into it, I was afraid that it was just going to be a mess. Kind of like the past few years, they've kind of put on like these dark matches where it's, you know, Raw versus SmackDown in a giant battle royal, and like Yoshitatsu would win. Like, it didn't mean anything. So, I'm glad they got something out of it, and it was kind of crazy to see David Otunga show up after like 6 months.
Yes, absolutely. I was just about to inquire to Julio about the needle in the haystack appearance of David Otunga in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
What do I think of that?
I can't
stand that character. I want him to get in character, of course. I want him to get annihilated. I dislike him. I don't even know why he's there. Like, you picked the wrong person to talk about David Otunga. I'm sorry, this guy.
But what about the thermos coffee sipping, bow tie wearing, lawyer for John Laurinaitis, David Otunga? You didn't even like that David Otunga?
No, that made it even worse.
Really?
I want him to.
Wow.
I wanted him to get 5 tombstones on the steps. It was just too much for me. It was just that bow tie, that thermos, that even John Laurinaitis, that whole mess back then. I'm so glad it's over.
The Laurinaitis.
I'm a total supporter.
Man, the
no
greatest
way.
Heel of the last
no.
10 years, John Laurinaitis.
No way.
You cannot dislike people power.
No. The only good thing about that whole thing is that The Miz won last year, or was it the year before, and he became like 4-0, as he loved to brag, and that was cool for me. But, you know, David Otunga has to go. I love villains, but that's not a villain. That's just useless.
He gets the X-Pac.
I like Jennifer Hudson, though. She's nice.
So does Otunga.
I'll do it.
So Armand, I know you're a big advocate of people power.
Oh, the greatest heel of the last 10 years.
Oh, no.
People
power made Kelly Kelly win the Divas title.
Relax, my daughter. My daughter loved Kelly Kelly. Relax.
Yeah, I'm glad that Beth Phoenix beat her.
But
John Laurinaitis was amazing. I mean, the scooter, the white suit at WrestleMania, and then the fact that he was the promo guy backstage, and then he just cut the worst promos ever, was just amazing. Loved it.
He talk about fumbling on your words. I mean, he was such a joke to me in the very beginning when he had the on-screen role in the very beginning, and it was a slow build for me to really start liking Laurinaitis, and it took him a little bit of time, but after about a couple of months, I mean, he was just so natural in that heel role. And we had a really, really good interview with Tyler Rex about 6 weeks ago, and he was just giving the ins and outs as far as the back is concerned, and he had some really good stories about Tyler Rex, about John Laurinaitis, and his heel character, according to Tyler Rex, really fit his backstage demeanor when it comes to his personality is concerned. So it was a natural for Laurinaitis to be that type of heel, and I think he did a fantastic job. Andy, what do you think?
Wow, I'm surprised we spent this much time on Laurinaitis, but yeah,
absolutely.
Cool.
People power.
Yeah, oh. He started out as like a Mike Adamley for me, but he got better. He grew on me.
Yeah, we won't spend any time with Adamley.
I think that was his job, though. He did it well enough that I hated him so much more. So good for him. He did his job well, and so did Otunga. He made me hate somebody genuinely. You know,
indeed.
Well done.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we go. The streak, 21-1. Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. It was rough for me, I'll start off with Derek this time. I'll wait till the end because I want to let y'all have y'all shine, y'all the guests, and so it's y'all's time to shine here. So, well, Derek's the co-host, but I'll let him take the lead as far as his thoughts. So Derek, I'll let you start off. Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. The streak is dead, 21-1.
The streak is dead. I was so disappointed. I didn't know what to do. It was so awkward was the thing. It just didn't make any sense. It came out of nowhere. There was no build-up to his being pinned. He was pretty much manhandled the whole match, but it just came out of nowhere. And just you could see everyone's reactions. It was disgusting. It was horrible, especially from Brock Lesnar. Are you kidding me? Undertaker defeated Shawn Michaels twice at WrestleMania. He defeated Triple H twice at WrestleMania. Defeated CM
Three
Punk.
Times.
Yeah,
three times. Yeah, that's a good point. And it was just, okay, and Brock Lesnar comes in. Yeah, he's a beast, and they built him to be that. But he's Brock Lesnar. He's not a legend in wrestling. He won't be a legend in wrestling. And it just feels like I was robbed of something. And it just happened so fast. It was grossly mistaken, did not like it. It was not the way for The Undertaker to go. It almost looked like he didn't expect that to happen or something. It was just so weird and awkward. And that was a weird event.
So good lead off. Out of all the other panelists, who agrees with the move?
I don't.
I'm probably not as down on it as you guys are, but I definitely don't agree with it.
Armand, you
turned
the corner a little bit, didn't you?
I love it. I love it. It was the
Someone
most...
Someone get him a lithium.
It was the most shocking moment in wrestling history. It surpassed Hogan joining the NWO.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And let me tell you why. This is really a build. Like, if you give me a second, let me work this out. It was a slow build for The Undertaker's loss. You know, somebody compared it to Bane in Batman, where Batman had defeated so many villains. By the time he got to Bane, he was just spent, and Bane just destroyed him, broke his back. You know, as you saw over the years, that was kind of the reoccurring theme. Triple H with the stay down. You know, this was the first time, and they built it wrong, and remind me to come back to that in a second. But, you know, by the time he got to Brock, he was just depleted, and Brock killed him for 20 minutes. I've watched the match probably 5 or 6 times. And Brock is just slowly, methodically killing him. Undertaker does a weak last ride. He does a weak Hell's Gate. It just told the story of a guy who...
Oh, don't forget the weak tombstone.
The weak tombstone. I'll blame the weak tombstone on bad positioning, but, you know, the other moves kind of tell the story of a guy, because the last ride was just, like, shockingly bad. It was almost scary bad. And it just told the story of a guy who just doesn't have it anymore. And I think the thing that made us so upset was, one, the build, and two, I bet money that everybody on this panel was either on their phone, on their laptop, talking to a friend, and when you hit that third F5, you might have turned one eye to the screen and say, Undertaker's going to kick out. And you're like, wait, that's it? It was just the shock of it, no music immediately, the crowd shots, which were incredible, and it just makes sense. No, and I know we want to talk about the young guys and, you know, God, I mean, I just read today Ted DiBiase Jr. was considered to break the streak. Look at where he is. You know, the point that you guys made earlier about the E doing a bad job with mid-card guys is exactly why, you know, on one hand, Cena, as much as I wanted Cena to be the guy to break the streak, he doesn't need it. Triple H doesn't need it. Shawn Michaels doesn't need it. You know, the two faces of the company of the future, or the three faces, are obviously Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns, and Bray Wyatt. Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt are still on their ascent. I say they still got another, God, 2 or 3 years before they really begin to reach their apex of really being the guys that we believe that they'll be. But who knows what's going to happen during that time. Is Roman Reigns going to become Bobby Lashley, and right as he gets to the top, he leaves, you know?
Man.
You know, it's, so that's why I think the streak is so important. You know, I don't know what happened backstage. I've heard things about Brock, you know, Taker wanted to give it to Brock 3 years ago when they kind of set this up. And, you know, I just think, and then on top of the promo that they cut, that was why, that is how they should have built it. They should have built it like, Undertaker, you have a streak, but your streak means nothing because Brock Lesnar has a streak against you. You never beat him. You can't beat him. And instead of every other person before, Shawn, Triple H, I can beat you. That was their motivation. The Undertaker's legacy is my streak means nothing if Brock Lesnar is not in one of those caskets. The build was just so bad, it made the ending of the streak anticlimactic. Had they done a better job with the build, I think all of us would be singing a different tune, or at least be open to singing a different tune, as opposed to just the outrage and the shock and the disappointment that's come within the last 48 hours.
Armand, I think the payoff from your build was good. However, I can't disagree with your points that you made, which were very valid. However, we have to simplify it to its lowest common denominator here. We're talking about a 2014 stiffer Brock Lesnar who cares about a paycheck, who has wrestled what, half a dozen times in the past 12 years, 10 years since so forth. And so I just can't. I mean, and here's the thing. I think, and I would even say this. I think it was even selfish for the Undertaker, as far as the fans are concerned, as far as the legacy of the streak is concerned, to give it to his boy Brock. I didn't like that. I didn't like that because I think it's worth. See, here's my thing on this, and we got to speed it up, but I just have to spend some time on this here. The thing is, I didn't want the streak to end. I think the streak should have, and what I wrote on Wrestling Inc., I said WWE could have had a Rocky Marciano. Instead, they took the route of Wichita State. And so I think that just having that undefeated streak go into the annals of WWE history, never being broken, it's such a career killer as far as WrestleMania is concerned for The Undertaker. And first, and he shouldn't ever step foot in a ring again. I mean, that basically just said goodbye. That basically just slapped Sting right in the face. And I just, it was just a bad idea as far as this. Now, here's the thing. Although I don't believe the streak should have ever ended, I would have been okay. I would have been way more open to 2003 Brock Lesnar defeating The Undertaker to end the streak. I would have been way more open to that. I've been more open to Orton at 21 beating The Undertaker for the streak. And Orton would have been a perfect person, to be honest with you, to beat The Undertaker for the streak because it would have just ascended his career so much more. And because to me, Randy Orton, although he's a, what, 12-time champion now, there's still something about Orton that just that does not scream, you know, one of the best of all time, although he's had 12 world title reigns. And so I think that Orton beating him at 21 would have been a good idea. My personal choice, I think that Michael should have beat him at 26. I know that Michaels wanted to retire. I understand that. I know he chose The Undertaker to send him off, like Flair was asked to be sent off, and Michaels was the person who offered his, you know, services to go against Flair at Mania. But I think that 26, that Taker-Michael series, that should have been the streak. But favorably, I wouldn't want the streak to end, and the best Taker send-off would have been at 28. When he beat Triple H, when they hugged, Taker should have never came back again. Because, to be honest with you, in my opinion, the CM Punk match is forgettable, and he lost this year. So the 2 years after that big send-off means nothing to me. And Armand, you made some good points. I understand the logic behind what you said. But at the end of the day, I just still think that Brock Lesnar, too, and again, let me reiterate, 2014 Brock Lesnar was just a no for me, especially with that build. So, AJ Lee winning the Divas Invitational, any thoughts on that?
I'm happy. Really like the Divas. I really want them to be showcased. I still think there's potential for a Karma return, Alita one more match return. There's work to be done with Paige. AJ has been carrying this division for so long. The fact that that title was defended for the first time since it was created was very important, and the fact that she won made it all that much better. Total Divas is an interest. It's fun to watch. I have a lot of friends that got into it, and they're not even into wrestling. I have, you know, it just was a big mess in a way, but, you know, with the time they had left in between the streak match and the main event match, I don't know, the people weren't into it, but AJ deserved her WrestleMania moment. She did so much, and if she wasn't on the card, it would have been her slap in the face.
Mm. Well, according to the WWE, she's slapping them in the face by being with CM Punk. But
that's so retarded.
Yeah, understand.
Personal life.
Understandable.
You know, did they
slap?
Did they slap Stephanie in the face, or whoever? They slapped China in the face when Triple H had an affair with Stephanie. You know, it sent her spiraling down into hell, and you know nobody talks about that though.
Yeah, but we're supposed to forget. Here's the thing, though, Julio. Like, according to Vince, we're supposed to forget, like before 3 or 4 years, we're supposed to forget everything. So that's Vince's.
Yeah.
Somehow that makes sense in Vince's mind. The main event: Daniel Bryan defeating Orton and Batista. Andy, were you hoping for that?
Yeah, well, wait, was I just hoping for Randy Orton versus Batista?
Hoping for Daniel Bryan to win.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of how you were saying earlier, though, that they stacked the deck so high against Bryan that it just became like a foregone conclusion. I kind of hate when they do that anyways, just because, like, you know, he's already 2-1 with the former, you know, Evolution guys potentially against them. And then they're like, oh, but on top of that, Triple H is going to beat the crap out of him. Oh, and on top of that, he's going to go through the table and, you know, nearly break his neck. So,
yeah.
But, you know,
that was a nice spot.
Yeah, it was a very cool spot. But they were also put in the unfortunate position of, like, me and I think probably most of the crowd was still like, I can't believe Undertaker lost.
Like, I was one of those.
I just could not get into the match until the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. And I shared with some buddies of mine that I was watching it with, that a friend of mine and I had a little conversation about John Cena. He's a John Cena fan, and he was talking about how John Cena's, he can't go, and, you know, he's still the top guy, blah, 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 blah. And he, and I told him Daniel Bryan, you know, could fill his shoes, and, you know, he was saying, how? And I said, you know, if the very fact, and we saw the match, and I said the very fact that the people are reacting to Daniel Bryan in this nature, from the biggest shock in WWE history, hands down. I still take the Hogan turn as the biggest one, but I think Armand, you bring up a good argument there, which is worth an article that one Andy Julio or I could write about. But I definitely think that it's the very fact that the crowd, the New Orleans crowd, rebounded that way with Daniel Bryan really goes to show how over he is. And that's a really good indication that Daniel Bryan is legit. I mean, you know, and I know the people in the back, I know everybody, you know, a lot of people backstage, including a lot of the higher-ups, weren't sold on him, but I definitely think that it's good. Any closing thoughts about that from anyone?
I think it was a great way to end the show. It was perfect, even though it was designed that way from the get-go, like it was a foregone conclusion. You couldn't send people home without a smile. I mean, it was WrestleMania 30, and it ended in confetti with the most over guy on the roster. Perfect.
Yeah.
Especially with The Undertaker lose, Manny. You have to have Daniel Bryan have his moment. That was his WrestleMania.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, keep it at that. It still makes Triple H look like a punk. Or, you know.
Yeah.
I'll give it to Brian. It is his time. He finally did it. We've been saying that for months and months on this show. When is Daniel Bryan's moment going to be? WrestleMania 30 was. We've called it for a long time. But
indeed,
it worked out. That's WrestleMania 30 in a nutshell.
Hey,
let's hope they don't screw him out.
Yeah.
I hope they don't screw him out of the title now.
Yeah. Triple H's Twitter account right now says saddened to announce the passing of the Ultimate Warrior.
What?
Yeah, I know. Triple H's Twitter account saddened to announce the passing of the Ultimate Warrior. Icon and friend, my sympathy to his wife Dana and his daughters.
Whoa.
What? I don't know. The torch has up right now.
I was in fourth grade.
Whoa. No. Oh, wow. Based on the release and confirmation of that and things like that, but if that is true, our condolences definitely go out, you know, but you know, we just have to just kind of wait for that to just kind of be official and everything, and you know, next week hopefully that's not the case, but I appreciate that announcement there, but next week we'll do a formal announcement if that's the case. So
I apologize, I just saw that on Triple H's account, so
I just got it buzzed in by on the phone just now.
Yeah,
apparently it's going viral.
We just got an email from the Bleacher Report about that. So, okay, well, that was a big monkey wrench to the show. We'll definitely get to a tribute of the Ultimate Warrior next week's show. Let's continue. That was pretty tough, but let's continue on with the show here. Very, very sad announcement if it is indeed confirmed. Let's just do some takeaways from Raw. I'll go through the whole Raw here, and we'll all have takeaways because I really want to spend the last 15 minutes to talk about the flavor of the week, which is all three of us picked three underrated matches in the history of WrestleMania, and I'm ready to get into that. But we only got about 20 minutes, so let's go through let's go through Raw here real quick. Daniel Bryan in ring promo interrupted by Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Triple H announced a world title match. Wyatt's defeat John Cena, Sheamus, and Big E. Santino and Emma defeats Fandango and Summer Rae, Derek's boy, Fandango. Brock Lesnar in-ring promo. RVD comes back to defeat Damian Sandow. Bad News Barrett debuts in that gimmick to defeat, the new and improved gimmick, to defeat Rey Mysterio. Rusev also debuts to defeat Zack Ryder, had an Ultimate Warrior in-ring promo. Paige debuts and wins the Divas Championship from AJ Lee. Hulk Hogan presents the Andre the Giant Memorial Trophy to Cesaro. Coulter comes out, takes the mic from Cesaro. Cesaro said he's not a Coulter guy anymore. He's a Paul Heyman guy. Paul Heyman comes out, and so Cesaro and Swagger battle, and Swagger loses by countout because of walking out. Then we end the show with Daniel Bryan getting attacked by Orton and Batista and Kane before the match. Triple H and then the Shield coming out. Does a Wyatt-style face-off with Kane, Orton, and Batista. Triple H tries to hold it off, but Roman Reigns spears Triple H, and then the Shield fights Kane, Orton, and Batista, and the Shield corners Triple H until he turns around to a running knee. So, Armand, what are your takeaways from that?
Paul Heyman is the most incredible promo cutter, possibly greatest manager of all time. Just amazing. And his ability to go from hated heel to beloved face in a matter of seconds is just unreal, you know, becoming with Cesaro, becoming a Paul Heyman guy. That was amazing. I have absolutely no desire to see RVD. I was cool off of that. I think that the I don't know if anybody else saw, but Fandango dumped Summer Rae on Twitter today, and according to the SmackDown spoilers, he's now with Layla, so plus one for that. And as far as the authority in the Shield, I like it because, you know, we saw hints of Evolution coming back, that becoming a thing. And what they can really do to build up the Shield even more is, as faces, when Rollins and Ambrose do turn on Reigns, they can build them up so much. And then on top of that, instead of us getting, you know, if some people wanted Company Man Punk to come back at WrestleMania and cost Bryan the title, we could get Corporate Ambrose, who I think can be just as smug and just snarky as a CM Punk. So I like it. It was a really good Raw. Again, the Raws after WrestleMania are always epic. My only concern is that, you know, because the Raw after WrestleMania is such a smarky crowd and they go all out to make sure that that crowd is satisfied, the booking for the few weeks after that always kind of takes a dip, you know. And then, of course, all the cities, you know, all the places you go aren't as, you know, in the know, or they don't have that sort of eye for wrestling like, you know, a WrestleMania crowd. So, you know, things that we normally see when get a pop or get some sort of reaction, they don't. WWE panics, and all of a sudden they, you know, they kill the character, or they halt it or whatever. So, you know, but I say all that to say, you know, I love the fact that there are so many NXT guys coming. You know, as I said earlier, I feel like the Hogan Rock and Austin was sort of a changing of the guard. And then, you know, to have so many debuts and vignettes and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, you know, I really feel like, you know, WWE is turning the corner, and I'm excited to see, you know, where they go next.
Nyamanya! Shout out to Lena there. Andy, your takeaway?
Wow, that was perfect. But, yeah, Raw was a blast. Probably 3 years in a row they've had solid post-Mania editions. Yeah, I'm excited to see Paige on the roster, though she kind of bungled her finishing move, but still, it was cool.
She did.
Yeah. Probably one of the best draws I've seen, at least maybe in a year or so.
Oh, yeah.
Julio,
amazing.
Julio, your takeaways?
It was a great Raw. That Paul Heyman promo had my hair rising.
It was intense. I was glued to my TV from the beginning till the end, and the other valid point I heard earlier with that whole switch from hated to beloved with Cesaro. I don't know how he does it, but I tweeted him, "You're a genius," and sometimes he retweets my stuff or whatever, but that guy's a bonus addition. I hope he doesn't go away anytime soon. Brock can take a vacation if he wants to, but Paul Heyman has to stay. And I was shocked when AJ lost the title. I'm glad it was to Paige, and I'm glad that the Shield is showcased and put into a potential feud with Evolution, because if they can go over Evolution, it would speak very well for them. So, and it's always great to have a crowd like that. It makes the show so much more interesting. They put in energy that we need to see on TV. Like when we're watching it, if they're bored, we get bored, you know?
Yeah. Derek, your takeaways.
It was a decent Raw. It was good. I liked it. I want to say RVD coming back was exciting. I like that. And it's just going to get better. RVD, he still has it. They chanted that while he was wrestling. What more can you ask for as a performer? And Fandango, I want to get back to Fandango in WrestleMania just for a bit when he was robbed of the Andre the Giant trophy. Give me a break. Come on. Everyone saw that coming. That was disgraceful. He deserves better. No one's going to argue with me on that.
Yeah.
Ladies
over.
And gentlemen, new listeners of the Pancakes and Power Slam show, this is not a gimmick, ladies and gentlemen. Derek likes Fandango. So carry on, sir.
Oh, Fandango is cool.
Rusev and, Rusev and Zach Wilder was great. And he's going to be I think he could be a problem today. I could see something with him and Biggie Langston in the future. So that would be a good ride. Other than that, Raw was great. Typical Raw.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, I think that John Cena should have lost to Bray Wyatt. Big E shouldn't have taken that fall. I totally disagree with that decision. RVD, yeah. I actually was talking to a colleague today, and I think that RVD should put over Rusev, actually. I want to see an RVD and Rusev feud going into SummerSlam. And RVD is reported to leave after SummerSlam to go on another hiatus. So why not put him? Why not put Rusev over RVD and kind of beat him up and write him off? Bad News Barrett was a great idea. Smart heavy crowd. Yeah, that was great. Paige winning was just amazing to me. Big fan of Paige. I'm not a fan of Cesaro being with Heyman. I think you need to babyface Cesaro. I don't think Heyman should be anything close to babyface anything. And I think that Cesaro's pops that he's getting right now, you're kind of doing the whole Jericho 99. He was so over, and he was booked as a heel, but he was getting so over that he turned into a face quick. And so Cesaro being a Heyman guy, I don't think that's a good idea.
Does this set up a potential Cesaro Lesnar program?
And I was talking about that earlier today. I would totally be in favor of that. Actually, I think that Lesnar putting over Cesaro would do absolute wonders for Cesaro.
I would love to see that. Yeah.
It would be absolutely amazing at SummerSlam. That would just be yes. Show comes back, because the thing is, you couldn't do that with Axel. Axel just wasn't over. But with Cesaro and Lesnar, I think that would be good. So if this is for the purpose of a Cesaro Lesnar match at SummerSlam, I can indulge it until then. I'll say that. So real quick, we've only got about 10 minutes left. So I definitely want to go into the flavor of the week. The three matches, so we'll have all of us say our three matches, and just a real quick explanation of why that is such. So, Julio, I'll have you start first. The flavor of the week this week is the three. We all chose three of the most underrated matches in the history of WrestleMania, and we'll start with Julio.
All right, 30 years of material to go through. I picked a team that we don't mention anymore, the longest reigning tag team champions of all time, Demolition versus Powers of Pain, WrestleMania 5. Okay, Mr. Fuji. I think that team was awesome. Warrior versus Ravishing Recruit for the Intercontinental title. First time Warrior really loses a match, and he lost his title against his nemesis that always found a way to one-up him. And Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, and Chris Jericho, WrestleMania 16 for the Intercontinental and European Championship. Three guys that were totally technical. Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho, their legacy speaks for themselves. Chris Benoit is in the news for many things. We don't talk about him, we talk about him. These were out of the blue, like real fast. These are the matches that stood out to me for this particular subject.
Very, very, very good choices. What do you got, Derek?
Hey, I've got WrestleMania 4, Ravishing Rick Rude versus Jake the Snake Roberts. Very great match. The build-up behind it was Rick Rude tried to pick up Jake the Snake Roberts' wife.
That was awesome.
Like superstars or something. But, I mean, for WrestleMania 4, that was awesome. That was a tournament match. That's a great build-up to that. WrestleMania 7, you had Boss Man versus Mr. Perfect. I thought, and again, the build-up to that, Mr. Perfect was the champion at the time, the Intercontinental champion. Bobby the Brain Heenan and Mr. Perfect was insulting Boss Man's mom. So Boss Man made it to go, and he's going to get all the Heenan family and defeat them. He beat Mr. Perfect at WrestleMania 7, but it was by
disqualification.
WrestleMania 14, Triple H versus Owen Hart. I thought that was overshadowed. It was a great match. You had Owen Hart, who's phenomenal. Triple H at the time, he was still fairly new to the big time, and he was a mid card. It was a mid card match, but that was both of them not in their prime. Well, maybe Owen Hart's prime, but not in Triple H's prime. But it was still a match you could take away from WrestleMania 14 and just say, wow. Other than the build up with Mike Tyson being there and Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold Steve Austin for the title, I thought they stole the show for the mid-card status until the main event.
I'm loving these choices. Andy, what you got?
My third one I'm going to go with Christian versus Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 20. I thought it was a ridiculous feud that started with those two betting a Canadian dollar on who could find the first diva to sleep with. Turns into Jericho and Trish having feelings for each other, and then Trish turned on him. I thought she and Christian were a fantastic couple until I believe Christian got injured, but it was fun while it lasted. My number two, by no means is this a good match, but I'm going to go Hogan versus McMahon at WrestleMania 19. Just like a fun spectacle, which is a match you can only find at Mania. Just a lot of punches and back rakes, but Piper showed up for the first time in like 6 years, and I kind of popped for that. And number one, I'll go the British Bulldogs versus the Dream Team at WrestleMania.
Oh yeah,
nice.
I kind of in subsequent years, most people when they talk about tag team matches at Mania, they talk about like Hardys and the Dudley Boys, but this really kind of stole the show at WrestleMania 2, as it was really the only good match on the show. So I'm going with those three.
Fantastic. The brains behind this week's Flavor of the Week topic, Armand, what you got?
Oh, man, you guys really you guys used a lot of the ones that I was kind of mulling over today. Christian, Chris Jericho, some really good matches. I picked, I don't have them in order. One is the MVP Chris Benoit, WrestleMania 23. Definitely put both of those guys on the map for me as far as being able to go. And that was the first WrestleMania that I ordered with my own money, so it kind of holds a special place near and dear to me. I also have Warrior and Rude from WrestleMania 5, but if I have to choose another one, since that one was already picked, I'm going to go with the Hart Foundation and Nasty Boys WrestleMania 7. I was such a Hart Foundation mark, and when Neidhart got hit with the helmet and they lost, I was kind of stunned. And then 3 is Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels WrestleMania 21. When people talk about, at least when I hear people talk about Kurt Angle, and especially Shawn Michaels being Mr. WrestleMania, you hear Bret, you hear, you know, the two Undertaker matches, you hear Ric Flair. You don't really hear about the match with him and Angle. I mean, you know, him being in the ankle lock for about 3 minutes was just, that was fantastic television. And they both, Kurt Angle has a lot of really great WrestleMania matches. But this one, you know, this one really sticks out for me. So that's my 3.
Nice. These are absolutely fantastic choices. Well, of course, this isn't in order. But I'm going to go with, in order, in chronological order, I'll go with Piper versus Bret Hart, WrestleMania 8. I think I just have a knack of face versus face matches at WrestleMania. I just love face versus face matches. It was for the Intercontinental Championship. Piper won the Intercontinental Championship at the Royal Rumble against the Mountie, and he had that was his only singles title in the WWE, and Bret Hart. He was a face, and he was getting back his title, and he was Intercontinental Champion around that time as well. And I really think, and they had that promo with Mean Gene Oakland before the match, and Roddy Piper was talking about, you know, little bitty Bret Hart with his diapers, and it was just a real. Piper's one of the best promo cutters of all time, so he really did a good job with both of them being faces, but still having that type of animosity. So it was really good. Second would be Randy Savage versus Crush at WrestleMania 10. It was a last man standing type false count anywhere type match, and Crush was Kona Crush, and just when I get mad, I crush things, and just the pink and orange, and, you know, just he was a big face, you know, after the whole demolition thing, and when he got just squashed by Yokozuna, like in the summer of 93, and then he came back with Fuji, and then, you know, Bret Hart, Macho Man was a commentator at the time, and he was trying to tell, you know, YouTube that moment, actually, when Crush turns on Savage. I know all of us have seen it before, but just recant that moment and just relive that moment when Crush turns on Savage. It's just a thing, a work of art, and it was just amazing. And then a match at WrestleMania was just definitely far exceeded my expectations. And then we get to a sleeper, WrestleMania 19, for the World Heavyweight Championship, Triple H versus Booker T. It was a 20-minute match, just about. And just about, from what was been reported by many sites, till that day, many say to that day, Book was supposed to go over at Triple H to win the title, and so I'm not happy that he didn't win. I think that Triple H should have put him over at 19, but Booker T can say that he, you know, main evented WrestleMania, so to speak, and the match against Triple H. The build wasn't all that good to set the match up. It was fairly quick. It was just kind of thrown together in a sense. Booker T won like a battle royal that year to become number one contender, and so, but the match delivered, and so definitely big kudos to that. So really, really, really good choices, and definitely a big fan of this panel here. We did you guys did a fantastic job. Like Derek always say, you know, it's one of those things that you just 90 minutes is not good enough in many cases, and so I definitely think that you guys, I'm so happy that you all helped out with the show and just celebrating 2 years on the show. So any closing thoughts?
Ultimate Warrior has passed away.
I'm sorry?
Don't have to these websites. Ultimate Warrior passed
we,
away.
Yeah, we just got, we're getting, okay, yeah, we're getting people in the chat room saying that it's on the website and WWE is reporting it.
Yeah,
wow, and I'm getting phone calls as well, live on the air about Ultimate Warrior passing. Wow. So with the last
that's my childhood icon.
Yeah. Wow.
Do we have enough time to, like, you know, everybody share like a warrior story or something? I mean, I think he's talking.
We've got a good. We've got 3 minutes, so if everyone can share about a good 30 seconds of a good warrior story, it's definitely worth it. Go right ahead, Armand. You can start.
First house show I ever went to, I was 7 years old. Main event was a casket match between The Undertaker and The Ultimate Warrior. My dad painted my face, and we made a sign that said, "Undertaker, you've made a grave mistake," and I'll never forget that, and then him showing up on Saturday night's main event with the different color Intercontinental title. So just unreal, man. I'm shocked.
Wow. Yeah, good story. Andy?
Yeah, one of my earliest wrestling memories, I was probably 5 or 6, to see him go face-to-face with Taker, and I was just terrified to see him go up against him, but I had his back. So, yeah, just absolutely shocked.
Yeah. Julio?
My first live WWE event when I was 12 years old for my birthday was SummerSlam 1989. We went all the way there, and I watched my favorite of all time back then, the Ultimate Warrior, regain the Intercontinental Championship against a man I hated for stealing it. It was the best birthday present I've ever had.
Derek?
Best match I've seen of Warrior, too.
Derek?
Yeah, I had a friend back in fourth grade, and I had the Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy, the stuffed animal, not animal, but you know, wrestling buddies. I had Hulk Hogan, he had the Ultimate Warrior, and he was a huge Warrior fan, I was a huge Hogan fan, I was around WrestleMania 6, we argued who was the best, I was a Hogan fan, but you know, tonight goes out to the Ultimate Warrior.
Indeed.
Rest in peace.
Real quick, my Ultimate Warrior story was... I was on the school bus. I was rooting for the Ultimate Warrior against Hulk Hogan. I was one of the minority. I was a huge Warrior fan, big Hogan fan at the time, but there was just something electrifying about the Warrior that I wanted to have. And so when I at the results of WrestleMania 6, and I went on the bus the next day and was just boasting the whole time on the school bus about the Ultimate Warrior winning and beating Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6. I was so excited that the Ultimate Warrior won and Hogan and passed the torch. So we're gonna spend about 10 seconds. Great stories. We're gonna spend about 10 seconds before the show ends to have a moment of silence for the passing of the Ultimate Warrior. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, somber way to end the show, but definitely some uplifting stories to talk about. Warrior, formerly Jim Helwig, but he changed his name legally to The Warrior about 20 years ago or so. But hey, you know, he had some ups and downs in the WWE, but what a timely way for him to pass by being enshrined in the WWE Hall of Fame. So I'm sure that his family is using that at least with as some type of comfort to this sad, very, very sad loss. So thank you all for listening to the show. Thank you, panelists, so much, as we do at the close of every show. Catch me on WrestlingInc.com. I'll be writing about this. I'm sure that Andy and Julio would probably get their hands on this story as well. WhatCulture.com with Andy Susek. Of course, BleacherReport.com. I'm sorry?
Oh, yep, that's green.
Yep. BleacherReport.com with Julio and I. Crave Wrestling at Twitter.com. Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Until next week, have a great week. Enjoy your week of wrestling. Daddy loves Elijah. And Ultimate Warrior, this show is for you. So we wish his family well, and our thoughts and prayers are with his family. So have a great week. God bless. Goodbye.
God bless. Thank you.
Thanks.